is Barbara Frankis, Reel One. I know this is probably difficult for you, Barbara, because this will be from what you heard later, but could you tell me something about your family in Poland, that what you know about your family? How long had they lived in Poland by the time war started in 1939?
I don't know, really. No, I suspect a very long time. Centuries.
Did you know anything about them? You know, your sort of grandparents or parents, what they did for a living?
Yes, my father's family, my grandfather, working in an office. I don't know which one. He had two children, my father and a younger brother, their younger son, my father's brother, Tadeusz, I believe. My father was a doctor, is a doctor, because he's still alive. And my father's brother, an accountant or something like that. He was in university. That's what I know. My mother's family came from Eastern Poland, which is now Russia, is Kovo, which is Ukraine. And she was working in a laboratory when she met my father. That's all I know about her. And her family emigrated her. Her mother emigrated to America many years ago. I think it was 1917, something like that, just before the Russian Revolution. Her father, I don't know. Her uncle also lived in America.
It seems from what you're saying, you know, it was a middle-class family background, wasn't it? Professional,
yes.
Middle-class, yes.
Looking my father's.
Yes. So you were born in 1938. I'm sure you don't remember anything about the outbreak of war. Mm-hmm. What are your earliest memories?
My very early memory was being in ghetto. I have a sort of glimpse of it. And being forced to eat. And my grandmother saying, you must eat because you don't have any strength, or something like that. That's to that effect. And also, that's one memory, and a very early memory is coming back from Kovo, which we went at the beginning of the war to get away from Germans. The reason for that is that my father went to the army at the beginning of the war, and my mother decided to go to her hometown, which was in Eastern Poland. Once the Germans invaded that, there was no point staying there. Might as well come back to Warsaw. And I do remember the train journey back. My mother, wearing a very large green hat, trying to, now I realize, hide her face because she looked very Jewish. And I remember traveling the train, seeing green fields and forests. That was my one of the earliest memories.
Excuse me. Then as you were growing up in the war, you know, could you tell me about your circumstances? I suppose you would have heard later the early part of, you know, how you came to be hidden. Did you get it? Yes, do you?
Yes, I don't remember how I went to that house, but I do remember being hidden. I do remember being in a flat. Standing behind the wardrobe all day, every day. There was a small flat with a wardrobe about 18 inches away from the corner, and I was put there and made to stand there, as I said, all day. The reason for that was because they didn't want the neighbors to know I was there. And if I moved around, I would have made a noise, and they would have discovered there was another child. There was a child there, they had a daughter, but two children make much more noise, so they didn't want the neighbours to know, because they were paid for hiding me, and they wanted to make sure that no one discovered it. And I do remember not being allowed to come out. Sometimes my legs hurt. And also I was terribly bored, so I used to lick my finger and draw various shapes on the sides of the polished wardrobe. And of course after some time, the polish had came out. The polish was actually off. So when they discovered it, they really gave me a beating or something, or telling off. Or I remember I was punished for that, because I destroyed the side of the wardrobe for my... continually wetting it.
You would have been a very young child, wouldn't you, at that time?
I wasn't that young. I was about five then. Yes.
That would have been more towards the end of the war, would it?
There was
that memory.
43.
What else do you remember about that particular house? Do you remember the names of the people who looked after you?
Started with W. I can't remember now, but I did remember before, because my father, my stepmother, contacted him after the war and had a chat. Mm.
What did the family consist of, apart from the other child?
Mother and the father, I think it was just three of them. And then he decided it was probably too dangerous to keep me. And also when my mother died, he was no longer paid, therefore he decided to get rid of me.
Do you have memories of your mother?
Yes. Very vague memories. As I said, the train journey I remember, and something in the ghetto. And also, she was hidden in the same building, as far as I know, with a number of other Jews. And Germans discovered it. And they brought them all out. And also they told all the inhabitants of the building, all the people there, to come out to watch the execution. And I was among them. But because I was small and I was obviously hidden from view, but I just heard the shots.
And your mother would have been one of those shot?
Yes. Yes, we watched it and we were told to go back to our flats, respective flats. And then after that, soon after, he decided to somehow dispose of me. And he took me, I do remember that, it was late at night, and he took me by tram out to the outskirts of Warsaw, there's a little forest there. And I remember the journey. The evening by tram, and then I fell asleep and I woke up in the field. It was in December, beginning of December. It was rather cold, and I sat there and I couldn't understand what's happened. But I stayed there because I thought that he actually lost me. So I reasoned out that if I move, he won't be able to find me, because he's bound to come back the same way to look for me. So I stayed, and it was the night, and then the morning came, and there was some... I don't think anybody was there, so I stayed all day as well. It was quite cold, because I only had a dress on, and there was no coat. And then another night I stayed in that field, without moving. and I could not walk very well anyway because I've been standing there wardrobe for ages. I had no exercise, so my legs were very, very weak. And then the next morning after, I was found by some boys playing, and they thought I was a gypsy girl, obviously, left behind, and I was quite light. Dark eyes, but they were hard. And the family came in. So they took all their coats off, jackets off, with one underneath, and covered me with all their coats to thaw out, so to speak. And they decided to take me to the police station. They didn't know what to do with me, only about teenagers. So I remember saying to them, oh, don't take me to the police station. I was absolutely terrified. Nevertheless, they did. They carried me and they took me there. And I found myself in the Polish police station. And so I suppose the normal thing to do, take a child to a police station. What do you do? So I stayed there. And Polish policemen were actually very nice. They gave me food, and one of them particularly gave me lovely food. I don't remember that. It was white bread and butter and milk and things like that. I obviously never had enough milk before. And the other policeman gave me black bread, which I promptly rejected. And so the police, but I couldn't stay there because it was this police station, how long can you stay there? So they had to decide what to do, and they had to ask the Germans. So they had to inform the Germans, which they did. They suspected, I think, I was Jewish. And I was taken to Gestapo for an interrogation. I do remember that. Very bright lights looking at me, and there were Germans looking at me, setting a lamp right in my eyes and asking me various questions. And I was obviously briefed to answer them properly. They asked me my name, my parents' name, and I did not tell them my name. I said my name was Maria at the time. I couldn't remember my parents' name, although I did remember it, and both first name and surname, and where I lived, I don't remember whether I actually knew it or not, but fortunately, I was also told how to pray in Catholic, so I could cross myself and everything else, so they decided I wasn't Jewish. So they let me go. Fortunately, I wasn't a boy, so it helped. Went back to the police station. The problem was what to do with me. Orphanages were full. There were an awful lot of children in Poland those days who had absolutely no family. Parents were killed. There were Polish children, Jewish children, all sorts of nationalities. So one of the policemen said, I take her home. And I went to his home. I slept in a corridor because there were an awful lot of people, very small flat. And it was most uncomfortable. And then another policeman who was childless, one who gave me that white bread, wanted to have a child, adopt a child. So apparently he told his wife, and she came over to the other policeman's home to have a look at me. She liked me and said, okay, we take her. So waited for her husband, the policeman, and they took me on a bicycle, because obviously the cars were only for the Germans. So I was put on the end of the bicycle, and he wheeled the bicycle all the way home with me on the seat, and then her walking next to me. And when they got me, we went to their flat. And it was a different era started. I remember she undressed me, washed me, and I was full of sores at my side of my waist, was with the sores and boils, most unpleasant. Anyway, she managed to somehow dress it, and she was a very good dressmaker, so she sat down to her sewing machine and actually made very quickly a nighty for me, dressed her. And she made the bed for me on the sofa and gave me white sheets. And I remember that saying, gosh, I feel like a queen and receiving white sheets. And a very nice, clean nighty and white sheets. And obviously fed me and fell asleep. And I fell asleep. And it was my first night. And I was very careful not to say anything, where I was, or anything. And the days went by. I couldn't walk, so she decided she has to teach me to walk a bit. So she gave me a broom to try to sweep the floor, because last time you're moving, which I tried to do clumsily. As the time went on, it was better and better. And she said to me, look, you have to call me mother, because otherwise it's dangerous and who you are. And if anybody asks you, you come from the country, from my relative's daughter, and they all died, were killed, and that's how we got you. So she told me that, and she gained my confidence, and eventually I told her my real name, my parents' name. I told her I was Jewish. She said, forget about that. Never say it to anybody. Eventually, she took me out, bought me a little coat. Remember, it was a rabbit fur coat, and she took me out. And when I remember walking on the pavement with her, and I saw a German approaching. And I got so terrified, I froze. And I held him very tightly, and I just would not move. So she told me through her teeth, don't show any fear, because it arouses suspicion. Just walk normally. This is dangerous for me and you. So I held her hand very tightly, but I started walking well. And really frightened, but nevertheless managed to eventually overcome it. And I remember we walked to church, I think. And another German came out, obviously less frightened, because I realized they were not going to attack me or take me away. So then from then on, I went out with her. Then I went out by myself to do gardens there. Where they lived, it was a workers' estate, and it was one of the modern estates at the time, and I was actually in a state preserved building, because it was the first one built with an idea of children have somewhere to play. There were gardens between the blocks and sand pits and swings and everything else. It was very nice. So I used to go down and play with the other children, and I never had any problems really. That was quite a reasonable, happy time.
What was their name? Do you remember their name?
Oh, yes. I kept contact with them until they died. Novatsky.
This was the name you gave me, was it?
That's right, yes. Because they adopted me, I used their name. And his name was Anthony, and her name was Lucia.
That first home that you stayed in, it seems from what you have described, you know, the state that you had all these sores, mm-hmm. and you know that you couldn't walk, that you didn't have a very happy time there at all.
No, I didn't.
No. Do you remember, you know, other details of your time there? This other child, did you play with the child? You know, were you allowed any contact?
Very little. very little contact because they were frightened of the noise.
And did he literally just dump you in that field?
Well, you see, he must have done. I don't actually remember because I fell asleep on the tram, in the tram. So when I woke up, I was in the field.
And this briefing that you had, you know, about your the details, your name and background, did that come from this family, that the man who had put you in the field?
I don't think so. I don't know, but I suspect not. I suspect it came from my mother. But I obviously can't say. But he would not take sufficient care to even to speak to me. I don't remember ever speaking to him or her. I actually do not remember having any contact with them. I vaguely remember them as a girl, which was about my age, and I remember being always alone in that room and food brought in. And then again, and I could sit down and eat.
Did you see your mother at all at that time before she was executed?
No, not at all. Mm-hmm.
You seem to have, you know, from your that meeting with the German, a real sense of fear and knowledge of the threat of Germans towards you. Would that have been so?
Yes, I did have a tremendous fear. And why I had the fear, I don't know, but obviously I did.
And it was interesting also that you also had a sense of your Jewish identity.
Yes.
Did that come?
Yes. Well, everybody was a Jew, but I had a sense of Jewish identity because there was forced upon them that they had to wear yellow stars. Obviously, I didn't, because I was pretending to be Christian.
So this second home was a happy one for you?
Oh, very happy. Really very, very happy. I had very good time. I could do what I like. I remember I came back once at 10 in the evening and I was smacked for that because I was too late. I shouldn't be out till 10. That's the only time I was really punished. But otherwise was very happy and we had a lot of food. The reason we did, policemen wouldn't have it and Poland was semi-starving, but the wife was very entrepreneurial and she had some friends or cousins in a different part of Poland, Krakow. And she used to go every month to bring lots and lots of provisions, meat to sell. And that was her job. So that's why we had the money, we could buy everything. And I was never ever short of food. I, in fact, hated eating. I definitely had a problem, eating problem. And I remember Mr. Novatsky was very sweet. I used to force him to eat my egg, put in his mouth when he left. So he objected to it, but eventually ate it because Mrs. Novatsky used to go early in the morning to sell the things she brought in. She used to leave me breakfast on the table. And when he had a day off, he used to mend watches, and he was sat there mending watches, and I would go over his lap and throw and put food in his mouth, and you know, really sort of try to get his attention. And he was very, very sweet, very nice, very gentleman. It shows you being a policeman is not always so bad. He was a policeman before the war, and he continued. And very nice. I also used to travel with her. Sometimes she took me to Krakow and with a consignment, and when she particularly wanted to buy tobacco, there was a death penalty for smuggling tobacco for Poles. So what she used to do, she used to sew tobacco between the lining and my coat underneath the lining, so it was absolutely full of tobacco. And when there were checkpoints when you came out of the train that used to open your luggage and show what you have. Of course, a little girl passed through without anything, so I was very useful in smuggling that. And I also do remember the train journeys back on the roof of the train. There was no room for poles in the train because there may have been a lot of carriages, but Germans occupied more than half, three quarters of it, and a lot more poles travelling. They had absolutely no room, so they were completely full down. There was no room to stand, so while they couldn't stand, had to go on top of the train on the roof. And there were several people there, and we were on the roof. And I remember I and the other children who happened to be there had a game. There was a bridge there. We used to put our heads up and just make sure who was the last one to get the head down before our head was hit. It was a competition. We used to have a game like that. I realise now what a horrible way of travelling it was. But at that time it was fun. So we used to come, we used to travel that way. And that happened every month, and that's why we could live.
How about your education? Were you going to school?
No, you see, in Poland, you don't go to school till the age of 7. So I actually didn't lose any education. And I was quite able to count. I don't know if I was able to read, but certainly to count. So I remember doing it. And then the Warsaw Uprising started, and it was really horrendous. I do remember one very unpleasant incident. I was standing with a friend of mine at the bottom, and the bomb went out and actually hit the other part of the building, the two wings of the building, other part of our building. And it was a tremendous noise, and the shrapnel just got me a little bit in my knee. I was very lucky. Unfortunately, she was hit and died. And I was standing not far from her. And I was just lucky I survived. But I remember Mrs. Novatka was terrified, and she couldn't find me. And eventually, I turned up upstairs, and the glass was all blown out and everything else, but at least the building was standing. So we packed our bags, whatever we could, and we went. And the Germans also announced that all the population had to leave. So we took a wheelbarrow or whatever, a cart, and took our belongings and went to the nearest farm looking for. Well, I did forget to say that the place that flat was on the outskirts of Warsaw was very near, obviously, the place I was left originally, because that's where they took me to a local police station. He actually worked there and lived there, very nearby. So anyway, coming back to the later period when after the uprising, we just went to a nearest farmer. And there was August, so we stayed in his garden, camped in the garden there. Hundreds and hundreds of people there. And I do remember this cannon going all the time, and when it stopped, everybody got really worried what's happened. And then we found that Allies dropped some provisions, I think there were tins of things, and it was a parachute. And Mrs. Nowacki somehow got hold of the parachute, and there was white, nice, silky material. And later on, she made a lot of clothes out of it, which she sold. I also remember being, when we came out of that father's garden, there were some Ukrainians, and Ukraine, they were worse than the Germans. They worked for them, they were the Ukrainians. And they were sorting people out, ones who had to go for forced work camps, and they put Mr. Novatsky on one side, because he was and then put Mrs. Novatsky and me on the other side. But I think we got reunited because he was too old to work, he was over the age, and she had a little child, but she was terrified because they were very, very violent people. So, and then we went to, shall I continue? We went to 30 kilometers away to a place called Grodzisk.